Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of six live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory-smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast on the left.
Rise from your grave.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
It was all over the place.
Yeah, well, you grew up in New York.
I didn't go to a lot of fairs.
Yeah, you didn't go to the state fair. You didn't see fucking REO Speedwagon or BTO.
I wish I did. All we had was hip-hop versions of the Looney Tunes on really, really long shirts.
That's disgusting.
I don't know why they had all that.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I remember hip-hop Looney Tunes. That's right. Hip-hop Bugs. My father told me the country was going downhill. All right, so this is the last podcast on the left. I am Ben Kissel. We got Marcus Parks over there.
Yay.
And then we got this guy here.
Hi, I am numerological expert. Numerology. I don't need to be good at saying the word because I'm good with numbers. And this is episode 222, and you know what that means?
What?
We're doing a good job. What is the number 222 trying to tell you? It means you should... Taking forward action will result in something positive. Keep doing what you're doing. Continue along with your current line of thought and course of action. You're headed in the right direction.
Yeah.
And your current intention is aligned with your highest path and purpose, kind of like when you're sitting down to write a manifesto before shooting up a bunch of people.
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe for this episode, don't follow on your current path if you do want to go on a spree killing. All right, so today we're going to cover manifestos, a very interesting phenomenon that a lot of psychopaths, it's something they do.
Absolutely.
And create.
That's what we're covering today. We're covering killers, specifically spree killers, who send out manifestos either prior to their actions, during their actions, or after their actions.
And today we're focusing on the manifestos themselves.
Right.
And these are really fun.
Yeah.
And not a fun thing, not fun what they did. I mean, that's terrible.
Right.
Ooh. It is terrible.
It
of course
terrible.
It isn't being
we
sarcastic. I'm being satirical.
Yeah, we all know that.
But it is, the manifestos are amazing because you really get to hear from the horse's cock what these killers believe they're doing, what their actual motives are. Like, we like to sit here and we talk, when we go through heavy hitters and we talk about their motives and we kind of wonder and you piece things together, sometimes you get words from the killers, but that's normally after the fact that they've already been in prison for a while and they've calmed down a bit and they've got to think about their shit for a little bit. This is a manifesto. A lot of these manifestos are written in the heat of the moment.
Right.
So you really get the brimming tea, the thick, the fat of the milk.
Right.
But these manifestos are just the pure noosh. That's what I'll call it. The pure noosh of the killer.
Nice.
So we're covering three different types of manifestos today. We're covering the crazy, the reasonable, and the pathetic.
And we're going to say reasonable.
In quotes.
Reasonable. Reasonable. We're going to start off with the pathetic killers. Now, these types of killers are the ones who publish manifestos revolving around their seemingly superhuman inability to get laid.
Huh.
And their constant complaining is focused mostly on social rejection rather than ideological problems with society at large.
Just one second. I have to start writing some things down.
Yeah.
I'm working on a... It's a script. It's a script.
I'm playing a character.
Yes.
Now, although Sung Cho, the Virginia Tech killer, definitely fits this category. Today, we'll be discussing a human being that is somehow even more repellent, Elliot Rodger, a.k.a. the Virgin Killer.
This guy is a fucking human diaper.
He is. I wish that he was used as that in prison.
What a mewling child of a bastard this kid is. Right. I can't believe it. He committed suicide, right?
Yeah, he's way done.
Yeah, yeah, he's way done. So on May 23rd, 2014, in Isla Vista, California, Elliot Roger embarked on a killing spree that would end in the deaths of six and the severe injury of 13. Halfway through his rampage, Roger emailed a 137-page manifesto to his parents, his two therapists, and about a dozen of his quote-unquote friends.
You mean to tell me he didn't have a lot of friends, Marcus?
A dozen is a lot of friends.
No, quote-unquote friends. Now, think about how many friends you actually have.
Eight. Like, I have eight friends.
Honestly, it's true. I think about it. With close friends, I have maybe six or seven.
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
Close friends, but these weren't. Yeah, let's just hear about one of these friends. One of these quote-unquote close friends. This is a clip of them, of this guy describing what it was like to be friends with Elliot Roger.
Sometimes I don't want to hang out with him because he's so depressing.
I mean, but that's just a friend.
Yeah, it's a friend. That's true. A friend sticks by you no matter how much of a droning, broken clock you sound like.
How long have we been friends with Holden McNeely from the Round Table of Gentlemen?
I mean, he makes dogs scared. But Elliot Roger is, of course, he's a fucking piss bucket of a human being. And
yes.
So the people that we even hang around him is, imagine this guy, Elliot Roger, is like the cool one of his friends.
Right.
And they're all still getting laid. He's literally just a friend. He was friends with a lot of exchange students, correct?
Yeah, Chinese exchange students. He lived with Chinese exchange students. That guy that was just talking was a Chinese exchange student. It was those guys and like his dad's friends.
Mm. Yeah, and it's very strange. And it's like, and they're all getting laid.
Right.
And it's like his Chinese exchange student. His friends are like, I went to a geometry class today and I talked to young Emily Sue, and I will say she is most delectable in the downstairs area.
That's kind of a funny joke.
Yes.
I'm just gonna get back to writing.
So the manifesto titled My Twisted World, the story of Elliot Roger, is an unbearable concentration of 21st century entitlement, and perhaps the most disturbing that we'll cover today due to the sheer number of men who think exactly like him. The internet is filled with people like Elliot Roger.
We talked about how, you know, technically the most masculine version of this was Leonard Blake and Charles Ng. It's like they took this cruelty to a much bigger level, a more intense level.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Cruelty of women, you're saying, right?
Yeah. Well, yes. the entitlement, the view that
the
women should be
your
toys.
Sure.
Yeah, women owe you something. So the entire manifesto revolves around his virginity, which he blames on the quote-unquote cruelness of women, among many other things, including his apparent inability to learn how to skateboard when he was 10.
Oh.
This is from his manifesto.
I had been trying very hard to get better at skateboarding, but when I saw that there were boys a lot younger than me who could do more tricks, I realized that I sucked. I could never master the kickflip or heel flip. All I could do was the ollie jump and ride down a few ramps. I saw 8-year-old boys at the skate park who could do a kickflip with ease. It made me so angry. Why did I fail at everything I tried? I asked myself. My dreams of becoming a professional skateboarder were over.
Better get back to writing.
Back to writing, I go. Women hiding their vaginal hair from me, and I feel betrayed.
So the first part of the Virgin Manifesto is a litany of complaints that start at the age of 5, in which he repeatedly mentions the name of a childhood friend named Lucky Radley, who Roger said became
an object of my extreme jealousy and hatred.
A Lucky Radley is also when you eat a Carl's Jr. sandwich off a woman's butt.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's a Lucky Radley, too.
Oh, I thought it's when you had a couple of onion rings at the bottom of a French fry container.
That's a Lucky Bill.
Oh.
For Lucky Radley's part, he said in an interview after the attack that he, in fact, barely remembered Elliot Roger, saying the Virgin only came over to his house a couple times and never gave more than a one-word answer to anything.
I wonder, Lucky, if you would like some Zeppelis I got from the Italian fair.
So you're like a closeted gay dude, right?
No.
Rogers wrote at 14, quote,
puberty utterly doomed my existence. I was finally interested in girls, but there was no way I could ever get them. And so my starvation began.
Uh-huh. So there is, you know, it's just, I love the voice that you chose, by the way, because I think that is his inner monologue.
Yeah, that's what he thinks he sounds like, but it's more like, puberty utterly doomed my existence.
I mean, he does. I mean, he has the classic closeted gay way of speaking of women.
Yeah.
There's a comedian here in New York City who everyone knows is gay, but he'll never come out. And I was hanging out with him one time at a bar, and a pretty woman walked by, and he looked at me and said, "Oh, I bet you she has a nice pussy." And I'm like, straight guys don't. What are you talking about?
What do you mean a nice pussy?
I don't even know.
What does nice pussy mean?
She apparently certainly knows how to pick a pair of heels.
Yes, that's very true. I'm sure.
And Elliot, he kept using, like, he kept saying, "These women kept rejecting my sexual advances." Ugh.
And then he said that he loves the word starvation, and he also loves the word magnificent. In one of his journal, in one of his video journals, he's like, "How could women deny me? I'm magnificent. I have my Armani glasses. Mm. Look at how I look at them. I look magnificent. God. And my BMW is nicer than the other cars the other boys drive."
I do have just a hatred for his parents, I have to say. I mean, I know there's sort of victims in this.
This
but
dude should have been smeared on the highway as a child.
Now, Roger said that all the boys his age were having sex at 14, which they fucking weren't.
They definitely weren't.
We all know that kids lie about that type of shit all the time. Yeah. Like, what sorts of weird shit did kids say when y'all were 14?
Like, oh my God, I used to be like, "I didn't have 3 pizzas last night." You know, and I would be like, "Yeah, I totally, I was like, I love watching porn."
Ben, Ben, you have like a smiley of pepperonis on your chest.
Yeah. Yeah, because I didn't eat it.
But Elliot, he believed all of this dumb bullshit that the kids were saying, and he hated them for it. This is what he wrote.
"That hatred would only fester the more I suffer from my sexual starvation. These recent events caused me to withdraw even further away from the world. I've drowned all of my misery in my online games. World of Warcraft was the only thing I had left to live for." Bam, 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 bam! Yeah.
That's me just fucking wanting to shoot him in the fucking head. Because this guy needs to fucking go.
Yes, I agree.
See, one of the most important things to remember about Elliot Rodger is that he was fantastically rich, which even further played into his entitlement. This guy, he wore the most expensive clothes. He drove a brand new BMW. Ugh. He went to movie premieres. He went to Katy Perry concerts. Ooh. This guy was more privileged than any of us could even possibly fucking imagine.
Well, he came from a Hollywood family. Mm-hmm. He's very similar to a Jonah Hill. And his father directed a lot of commercials, which pays a lot of money.
It does. And his it seems like his mom's only credit was that she dated George Lucas for a little while.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's a hell of a credit.
That's a big credit.
Yeah, but Ellie was pissed off that she never married him.
Why wouldn't you marry George? I just wish I could be closer to the mind that could have possibly have thought of that wonderful, magnificent character, Jar Jar Binks.
Jar Jar.
It needed a dose of humor. The Star Wars world had become so dour and sad. Yes, there's an army of clones, but what about me? Don't I yearn to smile? I starve for a joke or a chuckle.
I guarantee you Elliot Rodgers loved Jar Jar.
He had to. And he even had, like, in the Hollywood world, like, his dad knew a bunch of different people, and one of the dad's close friends was a screenwriter who used to give Elliot, like, certain tips, like, "Hey, why don't you try not being such a weird fucking creep?"
Sure.
And this guy, he actually did have some pretty good credits. He wrote Ruthless People, My Cousin Vinny, and most impressively, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
I'm actually going to see My Cousin Vinny for most impressively. I love that movie.
I'm a Dirty Rotten Scoundrels guy.
Yeah.
So no one likes your final choice, Marcus.
No, I said Dirty Rotten
Scoundrels. Oh, you said that was the best.
Yeah.
Ooh. Oh, overruled. I must get back to writing.
Now, even though Roger was already rich by any standard, he became obsessed with winning the lottery, saying it was his only way, even going so far as to drive to Arizona and Utah to buy extra Powerball tickets. but when he missed out on four consecutive jackpots, this... for some reason, was what pushed him over the edge.
Now, this is very unfortunate, because he just went from being your run-of-the-mill loser that wears Eurotrash clothes and drives a BMW, and then he went ahead and bought a gun.
Yeah, he went and bought a gun. Yeah. He started going to a firing range on a regular basis, and he started planning his so-called day of retribution.
Right.
And the thing is, I will actually say something about the parents, is that they tried. They actually did. Everyone tried with Elliot Rodger. No one abandoned this guy at all. His parents, he started going to therapy when he was in a middle school. His parents got friends like, hey, listen, can you help out my son? Like, can you say something to him? Because we can't get through to him. A bunch of people said like, yeah, I tried talking to him. I tried being his friend. I tried getting through to this guy. But he never took to it. He never took to a single bit of it. He was just... ruined.
What do you think is that mental illness? Is this like is this psychopathy?
It's narcissism.
Is this like a thing where...
It is an extreme form of narcissism combined with psychopathy.
Well, that's what they talk about with manifesto killers, right? Is that the idea is that they have an agenda and they want the whole world to bow at their feet and know exactly why they do what they do, which is why they write what they do. They have an endless need to connect and rule over everyone. And it's very interesting how like you have a whole active community trying to help somebody, but he still goes ahead and he pulls the trigger.
Yeah, he does it anyway.
He could have made it. I mean, he knows how to write. He wrote 130 pages. Why can't he just be an author? I mean, why couldn't he just be satisfied with that?
Ben, anyone can write 137 pages. That doesn't mean it's good. Have you been listening to the shit that this guy's been writing?
50 Shades of Grey is true trash.
That is actually really
and
true.
Sold more books than any book on earth.
Exactly. He could have written a story about the loner's perspective of a lonely dude going out looking at chicks that he can't get, and he buys a gun, but instead just gets his dick sucked for an hour by the gun salesman woman. That would sell a million copies.
It would, and all you have to do is get that on the desk of one of these schmucky producers, and they'll be like, oh, sold, whatever.
Exactly, just a books about a battalions of hot women that stop shooters before they happen by sucking their dicks.
I mean, Jesus, Henry, what would you do for this guy's connections? To be friends with the guy that wrote Dirty Rotten Scoundrels?
I'd only be making money, baby.
Making money.
So as far as this guy's worldview goes, after his day of retribution was finally being planned, this is when his worldview really starts to come into focus.
Women's rejection of me is a declaration of war. And if it's war they want, then war they shall have. It will be a war that will result in their complete and utter annihilation. I will deliver a blow to my enemies that will be so catastrophic, it will redefine the very essence of human nature.
All right, so I just got to... Do you know there's like 3.2 billion women in the world?
What?
Yes, billion, with a B. That's
what?
Yeah, you're one person.
And I heard somebody told me that even Danny DeVito has a wife.
He does. Perlman, yeah.
Oh, Rhea Perlman.
Rhea Perlman.
She's not a total dog.
No. No, I mean, you would have to kill her as well.
All right, I guess I did love Cheers, though.
Oh, no. Rhea Perlman has her own charm.
Yeah. She does. Absolutely, she does. I can see it in the way Danny DeVito smiles. How happy she makes him. I wish I didn't have to kill Rhea Perlman.
All right.
Now, Elliot's ultimate plan was to travel to the Alpha Phi sorority house and kill as many women as possible, because through research and stalking, Roger had decided the Alpha Phi had the hottest girls in town. He said,
I will sneak into their house at around 9 p.m. on the day of retribution, just before all the partying starts, and slaughter every single one of them with my guns and knives. If I have time, I will set their whole house on fire. Then we shall see who the superior one really is.
Can I just throw this suggestion out there at you? Why don't you're there, they're partying. Why don't you leave the knives and the gun and just go have a drink with them?
But what about the day of retribution?
That was just a day of celebration.
You mean I should take my phone and I should turn it upside down?
Yes, grow your heart.
And his heart grew three sizes that day.
So on March 23rd, Roger began his killing spree by stabbing his three roommates to death because, as he said,
"These were the biggest nerds I have ever seen, and they're both very ugly with annoying voices."
This is really Bundy-esque.
Yes.
To stab three people, I feel like I would wake up if my roommate was getting stabbed.
Well, no,
but
no,
I guess
no, no,
you
no.
just do it so
I mean,
quick.
You got like weird allergy muffs on, and you got like yeah. the ad, like the weird humidifiers running because they were a bunch of nerds.
But this yeah. is straight berserko. It's not easy. Berserker mode. It's not easy to stab three people in one sitting.
It's really not. And it was later on at night, too. I mean, this was like early evening. Well, I mean, we didn't really have time to go through the actual timeline of what happened with the three roommates, but go read it. It's terrifying.
Oh, when did they go to sleep?
No, they weren't asleep.
What?
It was just, he just walked in and did it.
Wow.
So tragically, one of the roommates was planning on moving out the very next week, as Roger reportedly spent most of his time in his room blasting the most hated of all musical genres, soft rock. His favorites included Phil Collins, Sting, and this song in particular.
Bring me a higher love.
Hey, Roger, I got a test
Bring
in the morning.
Higher love.
Hey, Roger, I just have... It's my finals week.
This is my Phil Collins time. You do not interrupt my Phil Collins time. Oh, thank God I bought these white sneakers so I could walk down the avenue in them while listening to this song.
All right, I'm going to move out in a week, okay?
Wait a second. Wait a second. Could you check in the kitchen to see if we have any clean knives?
Yep, all clean.
Oh, there is no musical artist I hate more than Phil Collins.
Is it Phil Collins' fault or his fans'
fault? It's Phil Collins' fault.
It's Phil Collins'
fault. I'm going to say this whole killing spree is Phil Collins' fault.
No, because he does not have blood in his head.
Yes,
Leave
he does.
Leave him alone.
He does, because the thing about this, this music set Elliot Rodger in a belief that every day was supposed to be a sunny L.A. boardwalk in 1987.
Yeah, that's
where
a good
he was
point.
Giving finger guns to chicks on roller skates.
And they loved it.
Yeah, and they were like, woo, you know what I mean? Like, they didn't realize he was watching in the videos, and no one loved Phil Collins like that in real life if he wasn't a multi-millionaire.
There were actors in those music videos.
Yes. Yeah.
My sister is the best gift giver I've ever met of any person. It's Jackie Zabrowski. She shops all year thinking about her family and friends and puts little things aside for their birthdays and Christmases. I have no idea how she does it. I don't know how she do it, but guess what? She always wins Mother's Day, but not this year. I'm coming back. Ready to win Mother's Day and cement your reputation as the best gift giver in the family? I'm taking the crown! All right, give the moms in your life an Aura digital picture frame preloaded with decades of family photos. I mean this. We have the Aura frame up in my home. We absolutely love it. I can put photos on it very, very easily through the app. It's fun to do, and the memories keep cycling, and I get emotional, and we filled it with pictures of Carmi and Wendy, and that is not sad. That is celebratory, so you should try it. It's honestly a really good product. Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off, plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code LEFT at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply. This podcast is brought to you by Squarespace. Finding work-life balance can be tough, but Squarespace gives you the tools to reach your goals and have time to celebrate. Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. With the new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint, you can select from curated layout and styling options to create a personalized website optimized for every device. Get your website discovered fast with integrated, optimized SEO tools. Plus, make checkout easy for customers with easy-to-use payment tools. And with Squarespace AI, you can explain what your site is about, choose your tone, enter what you need, and get auto-generated text. And that helps you save time. I know I'm sitting on about two literal wheelbarrows filled with horse pics. Now, part of the issue has been is a lot of these pictures are getting stopped at customs because some of them do depict various world leaders in horse-like circumstances that seems to be pinging a lot of these custom agents' accounts. Now, so what I've done to do is like, so while I'm trying to work on hand smuggling these horse pics over various country borders, I then also have time, because Squarespace is doing all the other ad work for me, to go and work on my killdozer at home. So thank you, Squarespace, for allowing me to diversify in the best way possible for this country. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial when you're ready to launch. Go to squarespace.com/left to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It says here I have to talk about something I need to get off my chest, and I guess I can share it here. I eat mayonnaise for fun. It's a hobby of mine, and it's an addiction. And it's a daily weight on my life, how much I need whipped egg whites and oil crammed into my veins as soon as I wake up. And a lot of people carry around a lot of different stressors, big and small. Some people are presidents. Some people are soldiers. Some people have to eat mayonnaise, especially with hard-boiled eggs, which is what I eat for lunch. But I guess I should share that in therapy, because therapy is a safe place to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. And what I do is I just add eggs if I have mayonnaise left over. I just continue to add the eggs. But if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. I hope they can help me. My God. I hope they can help me. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/lastpod today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp. HELP.com/lastpod.
We know about this man's penchant for the worst music in the world, because Elliot Rodger shot and uploaded dozens upon dozens of videos to YouTube right up to the day he died. And the videos had names like
"Life is so unfair because girls don't want me,"
and
"Why do girls hate me so much?"
And of course,
"Stuck in traffic in Santa Barbara made it a little fun."
And that's where he just filmed traffic while playing SOS by the Police.
That is making it a little bit more fun, though. The Police just always make it a little bit more fun.
I just think a lot of times when I'm not thinking about my day of retribution, about how women are starving me of any sort of affection, I like to make things a little fun.
That is fun.
You know, I mean, just stop by. If you're in traffic, just pull off the exit. Get yourself a little bit of ice cream. Because if not, you're just going to be sitting in traffic. And now I can just sit off to the side the same amount of time, enjoy myself a little vanilla cone with some rainbow sprinkles on it.
How was your date with Elliot? It was fun. We sat in traffic, listened to the Police.
I made it a little fun for him.
And not, he didn't just, of course, upload videos. Because his account is still up.
Is it?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
You can go and see his account right now. You can see all of the videos that he uploaded, and you can also see all of the videos that he liked.
Oh.
And he seemed to be overly fond of videos featuring various Pokemon songs, including this one.
Well, Sally, now that I've played you my favorite song, will you have sex with me?
Ah.
So you'll starve me again?
Yes.
He was also really into videos about the video game Conker's Bad Fur Day, which was a mature audience's Nintendo 64 game about a greedy drunk squirrel trying to get home to his girlfriend.
Good Lord.
So in between the murder of his roommates and the assault on Alpha Phi, Roger uploaded a video he called Retribution, easily one of the most repugnant, creepy, and pathetic videos on the entire internet. This guy, I mean, he is in the running for one of the worst human beings to ever exist.
See, I would put him up there.
Out of all the billions of people who have existed, Elliot Rodger, top 500.
See, I put, I mean, like,
to me, my number one worst dude of all time is still BTK. I would say he's my number one because he added the methodical genius level of cruelty that BTK had. Like, that's the one thing that luckily Elliot Rodger did not have was any sort of, like, real commitment.
Yeah. Well, these millennials don't get jobs.
They don't.
You know, yeah, BTK went out there and worked.
He really put his hands into it.
And that's the other thing, is that millennials take it such for granted just uploading manifestos to YouTube and emailing them out.
Right.
Ted Kaczynski slaved over a typewriter for years.
He sat in a milk-ridden shed.
We're going to be good parents. I remember when serial killers had to sit down there in a shed in the woods and
Dennis Rader had to snail mail a floppy disk to the police department that got him arrested.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah. I mean, Joe Rifkin had to actually go out and look for prostitutes on Long Island. Now you've got this asshole out on Gigolo Beach just putting up Craigslist ads. Yep. They're coming to him.
Tinder's getting people murdered in their own homes and people are just thinking it's a suicide.
It's not right. But for the record, millennials actually work very hard and they are being demonized.
Thank you so much for stating that. Technically, thank you for fixing that.
Technically, we are all millennials.
Yeah. Yeah, yes.
We love, we love our millennials.
I do. I love Amazon. I like the same day delivery that's happening. I like the drone delivery.
Same day delivery.
Yeah, they can do that now. It's spring to me now. I like that you can buy a little button. You can put it next to the toilet. If you want something and it's on your wish list, you can press the button and it just literally comes to your house.
I don't know why it has to be by the toilet, but
because that's where I do a lot of my shopping. Honestly,
you buy online?
Yeah.
Well, you're deeply onto the toilet.
Deep into online shopping while I'm shitting.
Oh, yeah. Is that on your phone or you bring your laptop?
On my phone. I'm not a fucking pervert.
Yeah, it's kind of gross to have the laptop there on your naked thighs.
Just my top of my dick, just like just snail trailing the bottom of my fucking laptop.
I do not want to think about it.
So here are a couple of excerpts from Elliot Rodger's retribution video. These are, you know, Henry's been doing the voice the entire time.
This is the inner voice.
That is the inner voice, but this guy's actual voice is
putrid.
Putrid. Ugh. That's the word I was looking for.
Yeah.
I'm 22 years old, and I'm still a virgin. I've never even kissed a girl. I've been through college for 2.5 years. More than that, actually. And I'm still a virgin. That has been very torturous. College is the time when everyone experiences those things such as sex and fun and pleasure. But in those years, I've had to rot in loneliness. It's not fair. You girls have never been attracted to me. I don't know why you girls aren't attracted to me.
I don't know why.
But I will punish you all for it. It's an injustice, a crime, because I don't know what you don't see in me. I'm the perfect guy. Ugh. And yet you throw yourselves at all these obnoxious men instead of me, the supreme gentleman.
Here, 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 here. It's the Wedgie Patrol. Here.
We're going to give him a wedgie so hard his father dies.
You know, I'm actually really surprised. He is so, you know, he seems fairly gender neutral and, you know, he seems actually like a guy that be girls in California would like.
Sure.
I've met a lot of dudes like that who get laid constantly and it drives me nuts.
With a producer father in Los Angeles, they're normally doing fine.
Right.
Technically, he's in Los Angeles doing it. It's like, he's just garbage. He's human garbage.
Well, the problem with him is that he has, you know, he's talking all this manifesto stuff. He's got these YouTube videos. Most people say when you were around him, he wouldn't give you more than a one-word answer on anything. Like, this guy, he believed that if he got a nice car and nice clothes,
that shit would just happen.
That women would just automatically be drawn to him and pretty much start sucking his dick on the streets. Because that is how intense his narcissism and his entitlement was.
He's not wrong. He's 90% there. That's not wrong. I mean, he's wealthy. He's got a nice car, nice clothes. He seems sensitive.
But they also, number one, he wouldn't know what to do with the woman if she even wanted to have sex with him. He wouldn't know what to do with her.
No, of course not. This guy doesn't even watch porn. He just jerks off looking in the mirror.
Yeah, so he's all fun. But the FBI analyst that went into Sun Cho was really interested, talked about this a little bit, about how there was a difference between the manifesto version of Cho and the manifesto version of Roger than the real life guy. It was like Cho was a nobody. Cho was a non-entity. Same thing with this guy. This guy sat and stared at his shoes and said nothing to nobody, but he was filled with silent rage. Yeah. And then that's how we got to make the jump on everybody doing this manifesto, which he said was the real him. And it's like, actually, no. The manifesto is a construct. The manifesto is the construct of turning yourself into a Quentin Tarantino character, into a big deal action star type, because now you can rewrite history. Now you feel like if I can put it in writing and put it out there, everybody will know I'm this malign genius or secret badass should have been getting his dick sucked the whole time. But in actuality, the real person, the real Elliot Roger, is the silent nerd who sat there doing nothing while his friends were leading normal lives.
Playing a video game with a drunken squirrel.
Yes.
And as far as his, I guess, narcissism went, I mean, his narcissistic complex, it went far beyond what it normally, I mean, there are a shit ton of narcissists out there. Every person that's listening right now knows a narcissist. But this guy was on a different level. Listen to this bullshit. And this pretty much sums up Elliot Roger's, like, view on the world and his view of himself.
I hate all of you. Humanity is a disgusting, wretched, depraved species. If I had it in my power, I would stop at nothing to reduce every single one of you to mountains of skulls and rivers of blood.
Yeah, we know.
And rightfully so. You deserve to be annihilated. And I'll give that to you. You never showed me any mercy, and so I will show you none.
See, I do believe Jesus. I've given this same speech to my health insurance company.
Yeah. It's good to say if you're talking with AT&T or something. All the guy had was mercy his entire life.
Yeah.
All he had was that. All these people willing to take care of him.
Yeah. Chance after chance after chance. And he talks like, I mean, you talk about him being in a movie, him rewriting it. He talks like he's in a bad movie. He talks like it's a bad screenplay. It's even got the the fake evil the fake evil laugh.
What do we do to counteract this kind of thought? Like, what do we do? Can you just say, like, what do we say to people? Like, listen, like, a part of it just gets better, or if it's just like you will feel comfortable in your skin, you will be able to talk to people, or like just get out and talk to people, or kill yourself. Like, if you think,
I
like
think this guy would just go with the latter.
No. There's plenty of people out there that are on the road to being this guy that can definitely get off. Just if any of this stuff that he's saying or any of the stuff that he's written, if that sort of thought has ever crossed your mind, if that's any things that you say on the internet, if those are things that you fucking write, it's time to go back to the drawing board. Like, it's
a mountain of skulls and a river of blood.
I mean,
I think about that all the time.
That's very sweet. We all think about mountains of skulls all the time.
But pick up a fucking guitar.
Right, exactly.
If you put that book up, a guitar behind that, you'll get ladies. But also, maybe de-emphasize your need for ladies.
Yeah.
Maybe the lady side of it you need to take down. And start thinking about yourself and thinking about what you like and what you need.
Yeah. If every woman that you come into contact with hates you, it is your fault. If women do not like you, it is your fault. It is nobody. I cannot emphasize that enough. If women do not like you, women are repelled by your presence, it is your fault.
You know what you gotta do? There are some mean women out there.
Of course. I'm talking every single woman. Ben?
What?
If every
woman. There's some terribly mean women.
Yes.
But I'm just saying
if every single woman. Yes, there are some terrible women.
You know
women.
What you gotta do is you gotta get a gimmick. get a puppy, get a be the tarantula guy on the boardwalk, be a magician, become
a
magician.
What kind of woman you want to get?
But I'm just saying, you could get a woman, get a hobby, do a thing, go again, apply yourself to something that betters yourself. Give you something to offer. Give something that you can give to the world instead. Yeah.
And also remember is that if you're a silent slug, you're not going to get a model. You're not going to get the hot blonde at the Alpha Phi sorority. That's just not going to happen.
Yeah, sometimes it happens.
Well, you just got to have a lot of money.
Ben, why are you defending these people?
I'm not.
It sounds like everything I'm saying, you're kind of defending this guy.
No, you're giving
bit.
Dating advice. I remember talking about Elliot Rodgers. I'm saying I've seen a lot of silent guys get with really hot chicks. Yeah, it happens all the time.
It's true.
Yeah.
But you have to be Dave Navarro. You have to wear a lot of scarves.
Yeah.
You have to wear, but then you change in your outfit. You need a bandolero hat.
Yeah.
You need scarves. You need many rings.
No, we're just in like a dating different. Portion of the show. Yeah. I'm not talking about Elliot Rodgers at all.
Yeah, but you've got to have charm. See, that's the thing, is that you've got to have a look in your eye. If you're like a super quiet guy, you got to have a look. You got to have a real good look.
Yes.
You got to be able to slither a woman across the room.
And you know who had a real good look in his eye? Kyle Odom.
Yes, he did.
Let's move on to our next manifesto. Oh, did he have a look? Now, we're moving on now to the crazy.
Now, think about this. Now, Kyle Odom, we're going to cover here. He definitely had a, I would say, a 9,000-yard stare.
Yeah, I mean, these people, the people that write the absolutely insane, crazy manifestos, these people are truly sick. These are the only people that I have sympathy for because they're schizophrenics. You know, they're manic depressive. These people, and a lot of times, they don't even know that shit's going wrong for them. A lot of times, they believe like, oh, this is just the way the world is. I'm the only one that sees it, except for maybe the president.
Unchecked schizophrenia can lead to some of the most vivid, intense audiovisual hallucinations that you can imagine. Like, literally, like, straight up, it looks real, it feels real. So along the lines of having DMT or angel trumpets, or one of those really, really intense hallucinogens where you're having, like, reality-based hallucinations. Yeah. And Kyle Odom was one of these men. Now, we cover this guy. This is recent, which is pretty cool for us.
This just happened 2 months ago.
And we don't get a lot of hardcore, like, view into the schizophrenic's downfall. And his manifesto is such a great example of how slowly it slides into a normal person's brain so subtly that he begins to believe it's real.
Right.
And the way he writes it, it isn't an all caps, out of control screed. It's not a homeless guy on the train yelling about microwaves and shit like that. This guy, he sounds reasonable. Like,
as he says, I'm 100% sane, 0% crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
He says that over and over again in the manifesto.
Yeah.
Which, if you've got to say it.
Yeah.
You're crazy.
Yeah.
So, just 2 months ago, on March 6th, Kyle Odom, a former Marine, drove to an evangelical church in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, walked up to Pastor Tim Remington, and shot him 6 times with a .45 caliber handgun. Kyle then boarded a plane bound for Washington, D.C., and was arrested by Secret Service agents after they witnessed him throw something over the White House fence. Mm. And what they found was possibly one of the most insane things we've ever read, the Martian Blowjob Manifesto of Kyle Odom.
I gotta say, if you're having one gigantic schizophrenic breakdown, it might as well involve a bunch of Martians blowing you.
Yeah. So you gotta thank them for their service. Thank you for your service,
I can't believe you came all the way from Mars just to suck my cock.
Yes, well, thank you for your service.
So Kyle's central claim was that his life was ruined by an intelligent species of amphibian humanoids from Mars with technology millions of years more advanced than our own.
Sounds crazy, right?
It does, but I heard he was 100% sane, 0% crazy.
That's the thing, is that it just sounds crazy. Because you know what? Truth is stranger than fiction.
Oh.
Kind of like that movie with Will Ferrell.
Stranger than fiction.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Now, as far as what these Martians' relation to humanity was, this is what Kyle wrote.
They have a massive breeding stock of humans, which they bleed and control from birth. They use these humans to live vicarious lives among us. They appear to be completely normal because they're good at imitating human behavior.
You actually don't sound that human right now.
What? No, I feel 100% sane.
0%.
Crazy! I'm not crazy!
100% sane.
But above all, the Martians were controlling and manipulating humanity for, and this, surprisingly, is a new one to me as far as why aliens come to the Earth. They were using us for sex.
We're sexy.
Ooh. We are sexy.
We're sexy.
I mean, you ever seen like Star Trek or anything like that? We're definitely the sexiest on Star Trek, always.
Well, you can look at us kind of squiggling around. We're pink. We're soft. You'd want to stick a dick in a bunch of us.
I just feel like he went through a weekend where he watched The Matrix and then he watched Earth Girls Are Easy. And then he just like combined them and he's like, that's my manifesto.
It's quite possible.
Yeah. Now, this is what Kyle wrote as far as how the Martians approach sex and humanity.
They take control of wild human beings and use them as sex slaves. Don't believe me? Ask President Obama to take a lie detector test on this one.
And that was the problem, is that it's
hard to pin down Obama for the lie detector test to see if he's getting blown by Martians all the time.
Is this a democracy or not?
I want to see the documents.
Well, that's what he was saying. It wasn't that, you know, you'd think he was thinking, it's like, oh, President Obama's in on this. He knows that the Martians are giving a secret blowjob.
No, he thinks that President Obama is a whore for Martians.
I see.
He thinks that Obama's in the thrall of the Martian race.
Right.
Yeah, so after first contacting the aliens through transcendental meditation, Kyle said that the original blue light that he had encountered during said meditation, and he, by the way, identified that blue light
as a female.
Yeah, oh. He identified that one as a female, which will be different from what happens later on. He says that that blue light abandoned him soon after, leaving him, I think this is what he says, after the blue light abandoned him, it left him to the devices of the sex Martians.
So what happened after he had his first real experience during meditation is that afterwards he went back to class because he was a grad student, I believe, in genetic science.
Yeah.
And when he showed up to class, he said that he could understand all the flaws in genetic science and that it all become too easy for him. And his instructors kept telling him, just have fun.
Just have fun. It'll be fun. Just have fun.
I just feel like he was smelling shampoo at a Kmart. The red light or the blue light special went on and he just had all these ideas.
I have a bunch of weird theories about all of this stuff as it goes through about whether or not any of it really happened or if he was just sitting in his apartment the entire time.
Oh, yeah.
I think he was out and about.
Yeah,
absolutely.
But he was going apeshit.
Yeah, he was absolutely going apeshit. But I think there's evidence later on that says that this was actually happening, but not everything that he says was actually like a flesh and blood type of thing.
No matter what kind of work you do, how you communicate is key. All those emails, reports, and presentations are equally important to the collaboration needed to get things done. Grammarly can help. Grammarly is your AI writing partner to help you communicate more effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact at work. And isn't that what matters most? Better writing means a stronger impact. Grammarly works across 500,000 apps and websites. You can't escape it. Like the ever-pervasive octopus of malice that is the NSA. Grammarly is watching your every move, making sure that you're doing it right. Data privacy and security are woven into the foundation of Grammarly, into the very essence of its nature. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner, and it helps your team make their point and move faster, because that's the key there. Work smarter, not harder. Yes, Grammarly. You know how many times it saves me from writing a long, rambling, one-sentence email at 4 o'clock in the morning to my beloved employees? Makes me sound like someone who doesn't just have a BA in theater. All right. I was taught how to be a tree. I was not taught how to survive as an adult. All right. My job was to cry in front of a weird Southern man who just told me all sorts of weird stuff about my body. I didn't learn how to write. So thank you, Grammarly, because you're making me the boss I gotta be to motivate my team to get out there. And, oh, man, you don't want to mess with them. Thanks, Grammarly. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Sign up and download for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's GRAMMARLY.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
1 in 5 Americans have learned a new language on their bucket list. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors. It's a waste. Don't waste hours on apps. Besides appetizers, that's the kind of apps I like. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Did you know that empanada is already Spanish? I didn't. Thanks, Babbel. Did you know that burrito is already Spanish? Wow! I just got to learn all the rest. And eventually, I'm going to be eating downtown Mexico. Thanks, Babbel. Here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at Babbel.com/left. Get up to 60% off at Babbel.com/left, spelled Babbel.com/left. Rules and restrictions may apply.
So the first specific incident that particularly disturbed Kyle Odom, that kind of just knocked him off of his axis, happened with a couple of fellow grad students. This is what he wrote.
After a few days of nights and no sleep, two of the graduate students began reaching out to me. And when I went to see them, they both kept pointing their finger at me, saying, pew, 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 like they were shooting a gun. They did this over and over and over, and I kept wondering what their problem was. Months after I left Houston, I was told they were not human. They were tasked with making me into the quote-unquote next school shooter, as they called it. I imagine this is why many of our school shootings take place.
I'm not crazy!
No, 100% sane.
So that's what his theory is that every single school shooter that we have, that there's just a guy walking up to him going, pew, 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 pew,
honestly,
pew, pew, with finger guns, and that's how they get you.
But if we were in a classroom together, we were doing that to someone, and they started to freak out, like, you just got to keep on doing it.
You got
to
keep doing it.
It's, like, so fun. I would look at my hands and be like, are these things working? Oh, my.
This is the most killer fucking prank of 2016, bro.
Especially in college. You're just going to keep doing it. Oh, you're going to do it with your friends, and you're going to laugh your ass off until it's not funny anymore, and then you're going to let it rest for about a week, and then you're going to start doing it again.
Absolutely, because it's going to become funny. But the thing is, then he stops laughing. He starts nodding, going like, I'm ready for my mission. And then you're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, I can already see how I would start doing it. Henry, you would laugh. No, Henry would start doing it. I would laugh. I would start doing it. Marcus would do it, but then you would feel bad and be like, stop it, guys.
Guys, stop it. He's really getting fucked up by this.
But then Marcus would start doing it and realize how fun it is. And then long story short, Marcus would yell at us when he goes and chews up the school. Not Marcus, but like the guy that we traumatized.
So not too long after that, Odom's very serious schizophrenic tendencies started their steady ramp up into a total break from reality. Concerning a plane ride back to his hometown from Houston, this is what Kyle wrote.
Now, this is where the story starts to get weird. On the plane ride back home, my seat was taken. I asked the flight attendant, and she directed me to a new seat. Once I sat down, an older gentleman in front of me kept glancing back until he got my attention. As he kept looking back, my head began to hurt and tingle. The moment my head began to hurt, his lips curled up into this evil-looking smile. The pain and tingling in my head continued for the rest of the flight and got more intense as time went on. And every time I felt it, the man would start taking notes in a notepad. About halfway through the flight, someone else in front of me held up a newspaper that said psychic reading for like 5 minutes straight. It was blatantly obvious they were doing something to me, but I don't know what. And once we landed, the older gentleman kept showing me his track phone, as if to say, get one of these.
It's the best phone on the market.
Get one of these.
Was he at a T-Mobile booth?
I think so. He ended up at a kiosk. Yeah. Meanwhile, that guy's just so happy being like, no one ever buys these track phones because they're dog shit.
Super. Yeah. You were 100% sane, 0% crazy, sir.
I'm not crazy! Love these track phones.
I said the prices are crazy, sir.
What?
Yes, the prices are crazy. No, you're 100% sane.
Thank you.
Apparently, Kyle thought that this entire experience was part of a secret job interview with the government.
Well, now you remember, he's dropped in and out of school several times. Yeah. He's been in school, dropped out. All of these things are happening to him and happening more and more often that he can't concentrate on school anymore. So now he started a couple of interviews at some government firms. And yes, he thought that this was the secret interview.
The world's most elaborate interview. Yes. Yeah.
So he then started getting text messages about a place called The Altar from both a man named John Padula and Tim Remington, the pastor Kyle would eventually shoot 6 times.
Now, this is my question. Do you think he was really getting these text messages, or is this insanity?
This is insanity because he said specifically in his manifesto that Tim Remington was sending him text messages.
In Bible verses.
In coded Bible verses. That he was just sending him Bible verses, and Kyle said that he would just sit and stare at the Bible verses, trying to decipher exactly what was happening. Although it could also be a possibility that Kyle Odom went to Tim Remington's church, gave him the phone number, and Tim Remington is just one of those assholes that decided to just text him Bible verses every once in a while.
Or he's on a mass text.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like a weekly, like once a week you get a texter.
Yeah, a once a week Bible verse. And yeah, because I think there's definitely evidence that Tim Remington was the only actual real person in his life, which is why he was the one he fucking shot.
Well, absolutely, because then he believed that he was the source of all his problems.
Yeah, exactly.
And then he said he got one last text from Tim Remington that just said the word angels, and then he noticed helicopters were buzzing his house all the time, as if they were doing it actively.
Yeah.
And the wheels started to come off.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, yeah. He said that he made an appointment to meet this John Padula, but before he could meet that appointment, something, quote-unquote, very bizarre happened.
After making the appointment to meet John, something very bizarre happened. I received the most unnatural erection I've ever had.
Hmm.
It felt like someone was manually pumping blood into my penis, and I don't know how else to describe it. And immediately after that, a song began playing in my mind. The lyrics went, "Sister, sister, he's just a plaything. We want to make him stay up all night."
So he just had a talking head song stuck in his
head. "Sister, sister, she's just a baby. We want to make him stay up all night."
Were you able to relieve yourself? Did you?
Oh, several times.
Yeah, good.
But no. Yeah, he had so he started getting powerful erections.
Yeah, really powerful erections. What did you say about the manifesto, Henry? Because you put in the words erection and penis.
Well, all of the naughty words were redacted. He had written out all of the words, and then he blacked out erection and he blacked out penis. I have to assume it's erection and penis. But then I was reading other stuff online, and it came out as erection and penis.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, so, but what got him so aroused?
Space vibes, bro.
We'll get to exactly what and exactly how he got so aroused.
Just been watching Fuller House. My God.
Yeah, Stephanie Tanner.
Yeah, the dresses that woman is wearing. Woo.
Oh, my goodness.
Cleavage.
Grapefruit smuggler.
No, unable or unwilling to sleep for days following the sister-sister talking heads incident, Odom decided to visit his family in Albuquerque. And on the plane ride in, Kyle sat next to a large man who kept telling him telepathically that he was going to crash the plane. Uh-oh. But at the end of the flight, the guy said, "Never mind, you passed the test. The government has a job waiting for you when you get back, brother."
Scary.
Man, I really do wish this is how job interviews work.
Yeah, it would be amazing if they just happened to you. Yeah.
Then when Kyle got back, he decided that it was time to visit the altar. And then, on this trip, that is when Kyle Odom realized, mostly due to the smell of the place, which Odom described as reptile and vinegar, that he wasn't dealing with the government at all. It could be only one thing. Martians.
Always.
And with Martians comes the inevitable sex.
Yeah, hell yeah. That's when it gets sexy.
Because up until this point, Kyle was extremely confused. He didn't know what was happening. He hadn't, you know, quote unquote, figured it out yet.
Yeah.
He was just thinking that the government was
just on a bonerific interview series with the fucking government.
Yeah,
I have to change it a little bit. I'm 95% sane, 5% rock hard. Rock hard.
So this is what Kyle wrote. When the Martians started coming into his life, when the Martians started to get a little sexy with him, this is what Kyle wrote.
One day I was in the bakery at Safeway when I got surrounded by a bunch of old men. Some of them looked at me and sniffed, so I knew it was them. They started stimulating my anus and penis simultaneously. Then they spoke aggressively. They said, "Humans are nothing more than the result of a successful genetic experiment. You are a threat to the way these people think, and you could no longer be free in society. Your life is over. You are nothing but a toy. Your purpose now is to suck cock." They continued to say other explicit things that were so obscene I won't repeat them here.
This has happened in the Safeway?
What I think is really interesting is I just think a group of gay men realize that they can manipulate the schizophrenic man into having sex with all of them by just telling them they were Martians.
There's a kid in the kid in the cereal aisle and a cowboy hat should be like, pew, 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 pew.
I will say this, though. If you do want to have sex with a crazy person, you just have to say, "I'm from Mars and our Mars commander demands it." And you'll get sex.
Yeah, and a whole series of other things.
As far as I know, I think it was just one old man jerking him off and the other guy playing with his butthole a little bit.
Oh,
at the bakery of the Safeway. Yeah, but I imagine it was behind the dumpster at the bakery.
Yeah,
the
I would hope so. Not like right there. I mean, that's a lot.
And I wonder what the other explicit things, because that's pretty, you are nothing but a toy. Your purpose now is to suck cock. That's pretty graphic.
See, I imagine they said other stuff like, "We want to look at your butthole. And, oh, we just want to look at it. No, I'm going to lick it. I'm going to lick your butthole, you young boy."
Or maybe it was just like, "I want to hold your hand on the boardwalk in Coney Island. Have a really nice time on the, looking at the ocean and the seagulls.
Why don't you guys just get married?" And that's what another guy said next in the soup aisle. "You guys like each other so much, you guys should just get married."
So after the butthole hand job encounter in the Safeway, the old men took Kyle back to his place, and Kyle said for the rest of the night, the old men constantly stimulated his genitals and made him orgasm to the point of serious pain. So bad that Kyle attempted suicide by burning charcoal in his car's back seat with the windows rolled up, but the Martians wouldn't let him.
Very intense.
It's a strange way to do it.
Technically, this is like the real-life version of the website Lemon Party.
Oh, yeah. Don't go to it, by the way, if you're at work right now.
Yeah, but otherwise, go check it out.
Check it out.
Now, in desperation, Kyle attempted to confront the Martians at the church. Speaking with Pastor Tim Remington, the man that Kyle ended up shooting six times, Odom said that the pastor's face changed, but only for a second or two, just like a little reptilian flash. This is what Kyle wrote. This is what Kyle said it looked like.
"His eyes really stood out, so they captured my attention. They were huge and bulging. The eyelids were darker green, and the irises were yellow-brown, with slit pupils."
Weird.
Yeah, and he actually did a couple of sketches of these aliens, these Martians, what they looked like. It's pretty much like a Muppet turnip head.
And he said the reason why they did purposely look like Muppets, and they helped engineer the look of Elmo, this is in the manifesto, in order to get human beings acclimated to what Martians look like when they come down to sexually take over.
So he just like absorbs all this imagery from the real world, and he has no way to, he's crazy.
That's
he's
how it
deeply
happened.
Are you telling me he's not 100% sane at this point? Is that what we're learning?
No, he's not 100% sane.
I would say he's 90% sane. You know what I mean? I would even give him the benefit of that.
Yeah.
I would say a solid 7% sane.
Yeah, I mean, when you get paranoid schizophrenics, I mean, every single thing that they see is a sign, and every single thing that they see is completely directed towards them. The world revolves
around
them.
So there's a certain selfishness to it, right?
I mean, it's not necessarily a selfishness.
They just can't control it.
Yeah, it's not a selfishness at all.
The thoughts are coming so intensely and vividly that you just think it's real, and now you're scared. Mostly he's in terror, running around thinking that Martians are raping him.
Right.
And literally, I have to kill the man responsible. You begin to believe that Tim Remington's the guy you have to get rid of. And then he says that he shot him 12 times, and he's like, anything but a Martian would have died.
Yeah. And it's not a selfish thing at all. I mean, it doesn't even have to be as bad as paranoid schizophrenia. I mean, a few years ago when I was having like really intense problems with anxiety, I believed that people could read my thoughts on the train, but only on the train, because the metal in the subway was a superconductor that would activate the psychic thoughts of people with latent psychic abilities.
Marcus Parks 100% sane.
Now he is, though, but he actually just got a certificate. He also literally now has, I'm sorry to say this, Marcus, but I can read your thoughts. Yeah. And you do have a bar over your head. That's how I know how to approach you about certain things, is that when when the lever is hitting about over 90%, I know that we can talk.
Yeah, wow. Absolutely. Nice. Yeah. And these things just happen, and I have gotten better, by the way.
Hell yeah, look at me. But no, it's true. Bipolar disorder also has hallucinations. There's a lot of stuff that your brain, again, is just jelly. Yeah. And that also, again, shows how thin reality is, about how, like, you're just one fucking cuckoo step over from the fact that you believe that Martians are blowing you every day, and that you have to kill the head of the Martians, or you'll never stop being jerked off until you hurt.
Yeah, right. I'm 2 weeks without bipolar medication away from believing that people can read my thoughts.
All right, Marcus,
again,
I just want to do one test. I have finger guns here. Boo, boo, boo.
Again, I'm a chill Bill, dude.
Ooh, look at that. He's a chill.
We're safe, Henry.
I'm a chill Bill, yeah.
Is it weird that it makes me want to kill?
That is kind of weird.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I've been going through a lot, though.
Well, Kyle Odom, despite all of this shit that's going on in his head, despite him thinking the old Martian men are giving him blowjobs and giving him handjobs until his fucking dick can't shoot anymore, he still attempted to live a normal life.
He was going to school to be a pharmacist.
He went back to school to be a pharmacist. He said, you know what? I don't care how many blowjobs these Martians give me. I'm still living my life, man. I'm still fucking doing it.
America,
yeah.
Also, there's probably somebody at Duane Reade right now who believes Martians are sucking his cock.
Yeah.
And he's giving you your prescriptions every day.
Yeah. I mean, that is the American way. During my first gigantic bipolar breakdown, I finished college that semester. You know why? Because I had a can-do attitude and a head full of Seroquel.
There you go.
So, and the thing is about the pharmacy school is that Kyle, he was actually doing pretty good for a while, but then the Martians, the brain manipulations started ramping up again, and that set Odom into blind rages and complete and total blackouts. And Kyle said that the Martians were fearful, paranoid, hypersexual, and hyper-aggressive, particularly the males who were power-hungry, megalomaniacs, obsessed with control, and above all, Martians hate surprises.
Don't even try to throw a surprise party for a Martian, because you will get blown until it hurts.
Concerning the behavior of these creatures, Kyle wrote,
"Who else do you know that has these characteristics? If you answered God from the Bible, you are correct."
Oh, I did.
"Martians are responsible for the God myth. Martians may have created humans as they claimed, but they are certainly not gods themselves. They are just another intelligent species that evolved on a neighboring planet. There is no God. There is no heaven. There is no hell. Earth is as close to heaven as we'll ever get, and we are letting the Martians ruin it, and they're going to destroy Earth just like they destroyed Mars if we let them. Our survival rests in their hands for the time being."
100% sane.
He's doing fine.
Yeah, great.
He's almost a pharmacist.
I mean, that right there is, you just replace, like, Martians with corporations, and yeah, you got a point.
Who? You're Bernie Sanders.
And so Kyle Odom, not able to take it anymore, took a .45 caliber pistol and shot Pastor Tim Remington, presumably the only flesh and blood representation of the Martians that Kyle could actually touch and see. And Kyle Odom currently awaits trial in Idaho.
And also remember, Tim Remington lived, so the whole church can really use that for fucking mileage, because it's a fucking miracle. Ugh. And he gets to come back and be like, "When I went through a tunnel of light, and when I got to Jesus Christ, he said to me, the most beautiful man I've ever seen, he said, 'It's not your time yet, Pastor Tim. Now you need to go back to your congregation and get $20 from each right. one of them so you can buy yourself an Xbox One.
An Xbox One? Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
And wow.
Yes, and if you go far enough, you can get your own multi-million-dollar mansion, your own private jet.
Wow.
They need it, though, in order to properly serve their congregations.
Yeah, they really need it.
And how we got the manifesto is that he threw a flash drive over the White House onto the White House yeah. lawn, and that can get you arrested.
Yeah. It oh, can't. Yeah. You can't throw anything over the fence at the White House.
What if no, it's like a I Love Obama a balloon?
Nope. No,
I still don't think they like it.
What about even, a flying airplane that says, I love Obama, please host back?
You can't even throw like a taco, empty Taco Bell wrapper over.
What if it's a Linder ball, like those delicious Linder balls?
You can actually do that, and you can, that makes a tree.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Chocolate tree.
The 25th Amendment.
Yeah.
So, our very last subject today. We've covered the pathetic. We've covered the crazy. Now we're going to cover the quote-unquote reasonable. And what we mean by reasonable is that we by no means whatsoever condone the actions of this man. We by no means think that violence is a way to solve anything. But what we say when we mean reasonable is that you read the manifesto and you think, you know, this guy's kind of got a point.
We all got bubbling over points.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to say we all got things. I've definitely yelled in a bank. I've definitely yeah. I have been forcibly removed from an office. That is true. I told you that story about how I quit my job and I threw my tie at my boss.
No.
I said I was selling out. I was at a headhunting firm in the financial district, and I was having a really hard time dealing with the job because I was getting screamed at all the time. It was like a real life Wolf Wall Street scenario where mm-hmm. my boss would go like, never get off the phone, never get off the phone. And I went out to the little triangle park and I listened to the Mountain Goats Tallahassee album.
Wonderful album.
And I had an emotional response, and I walked inside and I said, I quit. And I took off my clip off tie and I threw it in his face. And then security escorted me out.
Yeah, the clip could hurt somebody.
I guess so.
Yeah.
So the reasonable, or quote unquote reasonable man that we're going to be talking about today is Christopher Dorner.
Woo! Mm. This guy was a real Rambo.
He was.
Yes, he was. On February 3rd, 2013, former LAPD officer Christopher Dorner began a 9-day reign of terror that paralyzed the city of Los Angeles, making cops so jumpy that they accidentally shot 3 civilians
yeah.
during the largest manhunt the city had ever seen. It even topped Richard Ramirez easily.
Hey, they were excited to shoot those civilians.
Yeah, they were thrilled to have a reason.
Now, eventually, Dorner would kill 4 people and wound 3 others in the name of righting the wrongs that he said were done to him during the few years that he was a member of the LAPD, specifically institutional racism within the organization, which we know.
The LAPD? No.
Innocent. They are a fun bunch. I am not, like, it's hard to be a cop.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it is actually hard to be cop. Yeah, we actually have quite a few, police officers that listen to the show while they're on patrol. I've heard from quite a few. So let's go. I mean, we're definitely going to preface this by saying not all cops are bad cops. There's a shit ton of good cops out there. Most cops are good cops. You just hear a lot more about the bad ones.
Well, yeah, because those are the ones you write about. You don't always write about the good cops because it's boring.
Yeah. Boring story, yeah.
Super boring. Now, the interesting thing about Dorner is that there is a definite logic to his actions, to his violent actions. There is a cause and an effect. By his own admission in his manifesto, Dorner again and again from childhood had a pattern of meeting racist actions or words with swift, extreme violence. He told 2 stories in particular where he said when he was a kid, like he grew up, you know, and this kind of thing, like this is a sort of childhood thing that was instilled within him. He grew up in a town that was 99% white.
Yeah, and he was alone. Yeah, he was basically the only minority walking around.
He was the only minority. He was the only black kid. Kids used to throw racial slurs at him.
And he beat the fuck out of them.
He beat the living shit out of these kids.
Dorner was a big guy.
Yeah.
And also, Dorner was a real fucking, like,
through and through, like, blue guy. Like, he was, like, he was a goody-two-shoes in a way. He was a stickler for the law.
Yeah, he was all about integrity. That was what he always talked about, was integrity.
He's constantly used the terms, it's not just us, it's justice.
Yeah.
Like, he, that's a lot that he said a lot. So he could, I could see how both he was a very good cop and also very annoying to his compatriots.
Yeah, sure. And also possibly a very bad cop.
A very reactionary person.
Yeah, possibly he would have been, possibly been an extremely dangerous person to have out on the street.
Sort of like a liability.
Yeah, I would say a big liability. Mm-hmm. Now, if that pattern holds of meeting violence or meeting racism with violence, and by the way, this is just speculation on my part, it's possible that Dorner must have encountered quite a bit of racism in the LAPD to inspire the murderous rage that eventually bubbled over into actual action, which, again, absolutely none of it is justified whatsoever, no matter what. But if you follow the logic, then you can see how this happened.
Well, if you believe his manifesto, he already had one sort of violent interaction with a fellow police officer when they said the N-word in his presence in a cop car van when they were talking about another perp. And he was like, basically, he turned and he's like, don't say that word again. And the other officer was like, I'll say whatever word I want because he was his superior. And then Dorner grabbed him by the shirt and said, don't you ever say that word in front of me again. And wrestled his superior in a van, but because cops work the way they work, nobody reported the incident.
And of course, the N-word was no, as Dorner was going for a bagel or a donut.
Yes, yes. And then the second N-word he said was Nader. They were talking about the Green Party.
Nader, yeah. Yeah, right. There's actually a lot of N-words.
There's many N-words.
There's quite
nincompoop, ninja, not for nothing. That's two in there. Nancy is as a woman.
Yeah, and now we're actually out.
Yes,
yeah, so there's actually not that many.
There's
that we
nine.
Can say.
Yeah. And the 10th one you can never say.
And 9 is one, so that's kind of fun.
Oh, wow. 11.
Oh, my goodness.
And to give some backstory, Christopher Dorner was fired from the LAPD in 2008 after an incident in which he was found to be lying about an excessive force complaint registered against Teresa Evans, an officer he was training with in 2007. Perhaps not so coincidentally, this complaint was registered the day after Officer Evans gave Dorner a negative performance review 2 weeks after the brutality incident in question actually happened.
And there's a thing about Dorner is that he believed that he had never had an unsatisfactory mark on any one of his records when he was in the services and when he was in the police department.
Absolutely not true. He actually in
yes, of course.
He was in the Navy Reserves before he was in the LAPD. One of his officers, like, he was written up for like wearing his own shoes. In the Navy Reserves.
Oh, you got to wear the Navy shoes.
Yeah, you got to wear your freak flag fly in the fucking Navy.
No, they signed a big contract with Reebok. You better wear those Reeboks.
Yeah, that's what they said, that he was a stickler for the rules, but only the rules that he believed in.
You got a problem with my elf shoes? It's almost Christmas. I'm trying to keep the spirit alive.
It's just not really what we have here in the
Navy. You mean to say I can't wear my jingle shoes?
I did not even say that.
How am I supposed to keep the Christmas spirit alive?
Nothing.
Did anybody remember Christmas Carol?
No.
Scrooge went from a miser to a generous man, and it was all because
I'm not saying anything racial or anti-Christmas.
Come at you with equal force. Come at me with force.
I'm just...
Now, Dorner claimed that Officer Evans kicked a mentally ill man in the face in the process of an arrest, but the review board, after interviewing several witnesses at the scene who said that no kicking took place, they ruled against Dorner and fired him for false testimony. However, it must be said that the victim in question was given medical treatment for facial injuries that night. He told his father at the hospital that he had been kicked in the face by a female officer, and he gave a videotaped interview saying the exact same thing.
But then the father of the victim said that he was riddled with schizophrenia and often said yes to many questions that were asked of him. And then anything that's refuting this is coming from the mouth of Dorner. Dorner is the one saying that people did not stick up for him on the review board, and he was the one that said that Evans had the nickname of the Chupacabra when she had a reputation for drawing blood.
Yeah, he said that one time they were arresting like an elderly woman, and Evans gave the old woman, she had very thin skin, and Evans gave the old woman an Indian burn.
Oh.
That's a chupacabra move.
That is a chupacabra move.
No, a chupacabra move nips a small hole in a goat and goes,
ooh, chupacabra.
Yeah, that's the problem with Dorner, is that he makes dozens upon dozens of claims. His manifesto is very long.
It's accusatory, as you could almost say.
He's got a lot of opinions.
Right.
He's got a lot of opinions, and he makes a lot of accusations, but he also killed four people.
Yes.
Yeah, his credibility really goes down.
Yeah, it really does.
Yeah, your credibility really goes down.
Why, when you dress in camouflage and hide in the San Bernardino Mountains, for some reason you can't be taken seriously anymore?
Yeah, so for some reason that just sort of shoots your credibility to hell. But, you know, like Henry said, the person who's arrested, he was severely mentally ill, and by the time they got him into the actual hearing, he was incoherent, he was unresponsive, didn't say a single word. And while this does prove nothing, it is very interesting that Dorner could be fired from the LAPD for something so comparatively small when officers who straight up murder people or straight up just beat the fuck out of suspects can just get off with a slap on the wrist.
Right, right. Well, it seems like he compiled a long list of complaints, and they probably just got a headache with him.
Yeah, what happened was that
he was sick of him.
You have to build friends in any organization.
Totally.
Being a cop, again, is very difficult.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times they have to stick up for each other. And that's both in good and bad ways. There are ways it's like they look out for each other's lives and they sacrifice their lives for each other. But also there's a weird gray area between a lot of times of what is right and what is legal.
The thin blue line.
Yes. And so they... Mm-hmm. A lot of times they hold this code of like we hold ourselves together. We make sure we are honest to ourselves. We make sure we don't betray each other. We make sure we don't rat each other out no matter what happens. We'll handle it one-on-one.
They're a gang.
Yes, they're a gang.
It's the same thing.
A lot of the times. And so Dorner made no friends at the LIPD. That's what he said. He said apparently, like Teresa Evans said, when the day they started training together, Dorner was like, when I'm done, I'm gonna sue the whole LAPD. And he had started picking at different policies and the way people handled stuff basically all the time as it went, and became a real know-it-all. And they don't like that.
No, he became a know-it-all. He became a nuisance. He just didn't follow the company line. And, you know, when you're at any job and the entire time you're like, this place fucking sucks. Like, this place blows. You're probably going to get fired.
Right, right, right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there's something to hazing, and there's something to, you got to get acclimated. You got to get in the system.
Well, you got to buy into company culture or get out.
Basically.
Yeah. So after being fired from the LAPD, Dorner returned to the Navy Reserves, where he'd served prior to his career as a police officer, but he was discharged in January of 2013. We have no idea why. Just a few days later, the rampage began. And it is very unclear. I couldn't find out what Dorner was actually doing from 2008 to 2013. That is 5 years between the time he was fired from the LAPD and the time that he wrote his manifesto and killed four people. That was a 5-year gap, and we have no idea what he was doing.
You know when Forrest Gump just ran for all those years? He just paced.
Yeah,
just circular paced.
I think he was just getting real good at Smash Brothers and the harmonica.
Could be, yeah.
We do know that he lost his security clearance. He was discharged and blamed every bit of it on the LAPD, outlining all of his claims in what is now known as the Facebook Manifesto. This is what he wrote. I have exhausted all available means in obtaining my name back. I have attempted all legal court efforts with an appeals at the superior courts and California appellate courts. This is my last resort. The LAPD has suppressed the truth, and it has now led to deadly consequences.
Now, his manifesto began with definition of the word name.
Yeah.
And what it means.
Yeah, and he said, this is what this is about, my name. A man is nothing without his name.
And that's the whole thing. The whole point of his killing spree was to get the LAPD to reinvestigate his firing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that was the whole thing about the shooting sprees. Like, this is going to call attention to inequality in the LAPD. You know, it's not like Rodney King called attention to it. This is what's going to call attention to it. This is what is going to get people to look into institutional racism.
But it did go viral. He did very well. It got a lot of likes.
Think about how hard we've tried to go viral.
Oh, my God.
Never done it.
How many videos I made about how hard it is to date and, you know, and all the stuff like, oh, Tim Tebow, he's ridiculous.
Have you made a Tim Tebow video?
I actually did do a Tim Tebow video. For Jess.com. I don't think Jess.com exists anymore.
No, I don't think it does.
Now, Dorner goes on to name multiple incidents of racism that he encountered while working in LAPD. This is what he said.
I saw some of the most vile things humans can inflict on others as a police officer in Los Angeles. Unfortunately, it wasn't in the streets of LA. It was in the confounds of LAPD police stations and shops, aka cruisers. The enemy combatants in LA are not the citizens and suspects, it's the police officers. The attacks will stop when the department states the truth about my innocence publicly. I will not accept any type of currency or goods in exchange for the attacks to stop, nor do I want it. I want my name back. Period. There is no negotiation.
And then he right. does do a lot of acronyms.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, and that's the thing. Then make no mistake, Christopher Dorner was extremely dangerous. I mean, this guy wasn't fucking around. He was motivated, he was angry, and he was trained.
That was his whole thing. He was talking about, I'm going to bring asymmetrical warfare. And this was the manifesto is not for people. The manifesto was for cops.
Yeah.
And the manifesto is to the cops, and so it lists a bunch of phrases and a bunch of terminology and training verbiage that are in the manifesto that I don't understand.
Yeah, I don't understand either. You know, it's like, and that today is that since it was directed straight towards the cops, you could see why they were, of course, there's no excuse for them shooting three people.
Of course
but
not.
But you can see why that you could see why they were a little jumpy, because he named 40 different LAPD officers in his manifesto, saying this is what he said about it. No amount of IMINT, MASINT, and LINT assist you in capturing me. I am off the grid. You better use your feet, tongue, and every available DOD, non-DOD, HUMINT. I know your route to and from home, and your division. I know your significant other's routine, your children's best friends, and recess. I know your Sanchez gym hours and routine. I assure you that the casualty rate will be high.
If you just would have worn the right shoes here at the Navy Yard, we would have never fired you. I mean, you were pretty good.
Christmas
actually.
Is sacred to me. Christmas well, does just, not just I come kn- once
I
a
know,
year.
I
you
know,
learn anything
I,
from the Muppet I, film, The Christmas Carol. You have to celebrate it every day of the year. And no asymmetrical warfare saying, that I bring to the Navy will be able to handle what you will not be able to understand. My justice. Just it's not just us, it's just this.
It's July. It's July. So it's just not even accurate.
Now, thankfully, before that body count got too high, the donor got cornered.
Don't be so proud of yourself.
Yeah, so happy.
No, I stole that.
Oh,
that
was, okay.
That was a big thing back during the manhunt. It was just, you know, like, can't corner the donor,
can't
bro.
Corner. I remember that.
Can't corner the donor.
Memes
the
went crazy.
Man. It was a big meme time. A
lot of memes.
Yeah.
What a world. So, I mean, a live active shooter for 9 days, and the internet's just like, meme it. Let's meme that. That's good.
No, Dorner did manage to kill 4 people, including the daughter of the counsel who defended him during his hearing, as well as the daughter's fiance, plus 2 police officers who were killed trying to apprehend him. Now, killing the daughter and killing the fiance, like, that really shows that this man had a cruelty within him.
Yeah,
like that is cruelty, that is malice, that is spite. Like, that is, I mean, that puts him down at the bottom.
Technically, it's asymmetrical warfare. That's what he was doing. He was coming at them. He was coming at them with everything he got to make them scared. He was being a terrorist.
And that's what he said about, like, he took his cues from Vietnam and Afghanistan, you know, and the, you know, Al-Qaeda fighters. He said the reason why we will never beat them is because they have no fear of death. Mm-hmm. And he said, I no longer have any fear of death. And he just completely, every single bit of integrity that he had said was so important to him his entire life. And that's what that cognitive dissonance is that he talks about his name, and he talks about how I'm a good person and how the LAPD has smeared my name. And he goes out and he kills a woman and kills her fiance because she happens to be related to somebody he doesn't like.
Right.
And I mean, he's still going to the In-N-Out Burger in a full, like, one of those tree hats, like they wear during camouflage sequences in fucking army movies. And so it's like he's still, like, having to be a person at some point during this time. Yeah. Yeah, or he's eating leaves. Yeah. That knows what he's doing.
Hey, Christopher, we know you're not the bush. We know you're not a bush. Come on in. Get your In-N-Out.
You will never be able to defeat my asymmetrical warfare.
Okay. Now, Dorner got cornered and killed on February 13th in a cabin in the San Bernardino Mountains.
Oh, my goodness.
Either by a self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head or burned to death when one of the pyrotechnic tear gas canisters, nicknamed burners because they catch everything they hit on fire.
Cool.
They caught on fire after the LAPD fired a few of those into the window. much like Waco, pretty much standoffs end in big fires when cops get involved with this.
They wanted this guy dead, and you know,
they
rightfully so. The
trial
would have been terrible if he had one shred of honesty to him. It is that there is some systemic racism in the LAPD, and the last thing they want is a long trial where someone is screaming about it on the stand.
Absolutely, because then everybody's looking at it. If it's all over the newspapers, and it's just all these
becomes
attentions
a folk
on
hero.
It.
Yeah, exactly.
And of course, Christopher Dorner's idiotic, self-serving rampage didn't change anything in the long run. The legacy he did leave behind is a long, long list of shout-outs at the end of his manifesto.
Oh, wow.
Let's go through it. You know, it's kind of sad I won't be around to view and enjoy The Hangover 3. What an awesome trilogy. Todd Phillips, don't make any more Hangovers after the third. Takes away the originality of its foundation. World War Z looks good, and The Walking Dead Season 3, second half, looks intriguing. Damn. I am gonna miss Shark Week.
Hillary Clinton, you'll make one hell of a president in 2016. Much like your husband Bill, you'll be one of the greatest. Look at Castro in San Antonio as a running mate or possibly Secretary of State. He's good people, and I have faith and confidence in him. Look after Bill. He was always my favorite president. Chelsea grew up to be one hell of an attractive woman. No disrespect to her husband.
Okay, Governor Christie, what can I say? You're the only person I would like to see in the White House in 2016 other than Hillary. You're America's no-shit-taking uncle. Do one thing for your wife, kids, and support. Orders. Start walking tonight and eat a little less. Not a lot less. Just a little. We want to see you around for a long time. Your leadership is greatly needed.
Off the record, I love your new bangs, Mrs. Obama. I didn't vote in this last election as my choice of candidate, John Huntsman, didn't win the primary candidacy for his party.
Anderson Cooper, stop nagging and berating your guests. They're your guests.
This is amazing. Christopher Waltz, you impressed me in Inglorious Bastards. After viewing Django Unchained, I was sold.
Dave Brubeck's Take 5 is the greatest piece of music ever, period. Hans Zimmer, William Bell, Eric Clapton, B.B. King, Bob Marley, Sam Cooke, Metallica, Rob Zombie, Nora Jones, Marvin Gaye, Jay-Z, and King Louis Armstrong are musical prodigies.
Larry David, Kevin Hart, the late Patrice O'Neal, Lisa Lampanelli, Chris Rock, Jerry Seinfeld, Louis C.K., Dave Chappelle, John Stewart, Wanda Sykes, Dennis Miller, and Jeff Rocks are pure geniuses. I'm a big fan of all your work.
Larry David, I agree. 72 to 82 degrees is way too hot in a residence. 68 degrees is perfect. It is so weird.
And I would say about a third of the shout outs that he gives.
Hey, man, I'm down. Jeff Ross got a shout out. And I remember when it happened because I was in LA at the time and I was with Jeff. It was like me, Eddie, and Jeff hanging out. I literally just like, she's got a shout out from Dorner. We're all like, woo!
Amazing.
We're all excited.
And we have one more here. Henry, I actually loved your Netflix special.
Yeah,
characters.
That's what I'm talking about. I got to say, Henry, what you did with the characters, it was outrageous. You were obviously playing a character. I got to appreciate that sometimes you step out of line in order to keep the rest of us in line.
Can't corner the Dorner.
Cannot corner that. Well, you can.
Yeah, you can. Yeah. He shoots himself or you burn down the
building.
You
set him on fire like he's a guinea pig in Indonesia.
Yeah, sure. Turns out you can.
And we got one last guy that we don't really got the time to cover because we already did him for fucking two episodes.
Yeah, we did two episodes. We did Ted Kaczynski.
I will have my revenge.
And Ted, another reasonable man. He makes a couple of good points about the emergence of technology in society and how it's taking us further from being human. Every year that goes by, Ted Kaczynski's manifesto gets just a little bit more true. But the problem with it is that it is the most boring fucking thing I've ever read in my life.
Wait a second, but this is let Kissel read one of the more scintillating paragraphs.
For some reason, they came in today and they're like, Kissel, you're going to read Ted Kaczynski and do it like Kissel. And so I don't know what that means. All right, so let's see here. So this, you know, he uses a lot of large words. I gotta say, it may be that existentialism is in a large part. It may be that existentialism is in a large part a response to the purposelessness of modern life, very widespread in modern society. Okay, so is the search for fulfillment? But we think so is the search. But you cut it up all wrong, Marcus. Is the search for fulfillment, but we think that for the majority of people, an activity whose main goal is fulfillment, that is a surrogate activity, does not bring completely satisfactory fulfillment. In other words, it does not fully satisfy the need for the power process. See paragraph 41. So I feel like there's a joke on me here.
It's fucking difficult to shit. And it's boring as fuck. He was stinky as a bastard.
Dude, you really do when you read it. You feel like you wandered into the wrong college course. Like right. You feel like you wandered the professor that really loves the sound of his own voice.
And you're like week six.
Yeah. And you're past the point of being able to drop the class. And now you're just stuck with Professor Kaczynski.
All right, so I'll get a bunch of Facebook. Ben can't read. Well, you know what?
Ben can read. We all know that Ben can read.
No, Ben does very good. He does a whole podcast where he sounds very smart. Abel Lincoln stop at.
Yeah.
No, I know. I do a bunch of podcasts.
Yeah. That's the one I would say you're probably the most smart on.
Oh, I like politics, Henry.
I know you do.
You know I like politics, Henry.
I know.
Oh, my goodness. All right, manifestos.
Jesus,
I gotta spend. I've spent the last 2 days reading manifestos, right?
Good
you know,
God.
We do this every episode of something like this where it's just piles of nonsense. I'm mentally exhausted.
Yeah.
I have a hard time understanding because they're at the height of either schizophrenia or mental anguish. They're not written very well.
No, they're absolutely not. They're disjointed a lot of times. They're rambling. Ted Kaczynski, he worked on his for years.
I'd say too long.
Way too long. He thought, well, it was all he had to do. But these guys, you really do. You read this stuff and your brain turns to mush. Speaking of which, I got to say a big thank you to Megan Fierro, research assistant, who actually read Ted Kaczynski's manifesto and gave us quite a few choice clips from it, some choice excerpts from it, but it's too boring.
It's too boring.
It's just way too boring. And so I want to thank her for taking the bullet on that one. I also want to thank research assistant Alice Bennett, who did a lot of great work on this. The research assistants have really been killing it lately.
Two have already died.
They actually have.
It's really sad. They die of that Japanese death where they're just too exhausted from work.
Right. Death by overwork. Thanks to the research assistants that have really been helping us out a lot lately.
I'm going
to
tell you this. You know what? Also, you don't have to kill to get a manifesto out of your system. Go ahead, write a manifesto, keep it in your drafts, your email. Just keep it.
Technically, J.K. Rowling was starting a manifesto. It turned into Harry Potter.
It turned into a lovely book for kids.
Yes.
So start writing your manifesto. Here's a couple of things that you can start with. There's a couple of topics I like to say, like to start with.
Oh, you're going to give them some prompts?
Yeah. Here's to all those who didn't believe in me.
That's a good one.
That's a good one. My own personal revolution.
Good.
I think it's a good one. And the other one is I'm taking you all with me.
All right. Yeah. Not bad.
You just write along those themes and then save them in a draft and then you get them out of your system.
Yeah, get it out of your system. And then after that, maybe try to, I don't know, try to convert your manifesto into a concept album.
Or go to a bowling alley and bowl.
Do people still do that?
I think so.
Concept albums? Absolutely.
Bowling alleys. All right. Thank you guys so much for listening and supporting the Patreon page.
Of course.
We can do that.
Patreon.com/lastpodcastontheleft. We're getting really close to our goal of 10,000 a month.
Oh,
and of course,
God,
as we said, if we get that 10,000 a month, then pretty much everything will be self-sufficient. It paid for itself. We will be able to make Last Podcast a top priority. And speaking of which, and we'll be able to take a lot more live shows. And speaking of which, God damn, we've got so many live shows all across America coming up this summer. The big one that we got right now is Los Angeles. We are coming to Los Angeles on July 16th. We're going to be at the Crest Westfield Theater doing a live showing and live commentary of one of the best horror movies that has ever existed and one of the first horror movies that has ever existed, Haxan.
Woo.
All right, but before that, we got to go to my wonderful land of the Midwest.
We're going to Chicago.
We're going to Chicago.
Yeah, we already sold out the first show. We added a second show. It's going to be our children's matinee.
It's
children's matinee in name only.
What it is that we do. What it is that you, if you bring a child,
you're
that's
a bad
on you.
Parent.
That's on you.
Yeah, that is absolutely on you.
But I'll entertain your child.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
I don't mean suck its cock.
No. All right, all right. But that's a good indication of how our show is. So yes. Remember that when you, if you do have a child.
But just Google last podcast. I don't have the exact information right now. Just Google last podcast on the left, Chicago yes. tickets, and you'll be able to find us there. If you want tickets for our Los Angeles show, get those soon. We are close to selling out that show. Yeah. And by the way, that Haxan showing, it's going to be our own cut. And I'm going to be doing a custom soundtrack for that movie because it's a silent film. I'm super excited for that. We're going to start work on that real soon. It's going to be a really, and we're going to have a band play beforehand called The Real Players. I just sent them a list of a ton of different really cool songs from cool. horror movies. They're already starting to work on it. I made sure to put some Iron Maiden in there. They Sweet. Said they can fucking handle
Are
it.
Are you going
to
do What Evil Men Do?
They're going to do Run to the Hills, but I can also get them to do What Evil Men Do.
Fuck what yeah, about man. Sarah McLachlan? In the Arms of the Angels.
You know, I lost my virginity to Sarah McLachlan.
You did?
Yeah, it wasn't my choice.
No, oh, no, my
the girl that I was with, she was a college freshman. I was a junior in high school, and she thought that she wanted to make it special for me.
Ugh, in the Arms of the Angels? Yeah, you're fucking a dead woman.
Yeah, no, I was going to say a crying dog.
I mean, this was 1998, 1999.
Before she sold it to the...
Yeah, before she sold to the ASBs.
Sold out.
Yeah. She did sell out to the ASBs. She really... I mean, she's making bank off of that.
Totally sold out. But the live shows we've got, we can't announce them just yet because they're not officially booked, but we've got some really cool shit all over the country coming up.
Follow us on Instagram at LP on the left, and you can follow me on Instagram at Dr. Fantasti. I know Kissel is it.
I'm
just
working
a new
on
one.
It.
Marcus is at Marcus Parks.
Yeah, and you can also listen to my music show, The Lucky Bone Show, if you go to mixcloud.com/Marcus Parks.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Ben Kissel. I mean, I am on Instagram at BenKissel1. I just forgot my password. I don't know how to get it.
You gotta just change your password.
Yeah, but then all right.
Yeah, I mean, you could just click a button that says forgot password and they send you a new password to your email.
Yeah, where am I sending it to?
To your email.
Oh.
There's a lot of complications. don't confuse him. Yeah. I'm on Twitter at Henry Loves You. Also, follow me on Snapchat, I guess.
Oh, yeah. You're doing Snapchat?
I've sent out like three of them.
I don't know Snapchat what this was is. Out.
I don't know.
I
what
heard it was out.
I don't
out.
Really
it's
care.
It's totally out. Yeah, yeah. All of these comedians are saying like, "Oh, I guess I got to get on Snapchat now."
It's out.
You guys are you missed the boat.
Great. Yeah. Good. I don't want to. I like Instagram.
And if you want your very own Last Podcast on the Left T-shirt, go to cavecomedyradio.com/merch.
And I guess we haven't done a show since the last live show. Thanks so much for everyone who came out to The Creek in the Cave. It was a wonderful show, and everyone is always incredible. And for supporting all the shows here on CCR, we are crushing it. Marcus and I do Able Against Top Hat. As mentioned, that's politics. It's so fun this year.
Yeah.
Roundtable of Gentlemen, Get Drunk with Your Friends, Sex and Other Human Activities,
where
and Page 7.
Yeah, Sex and the Human Activities, where I elaborate more on those weird things I was talking about earlier with thinking people could read my thoughts. It's a mental health advice show. I am qualified to give it because
you
100% sane. Hail yourselves.
Oh, and also Page 7, the last few weeks and the next week or so, Henry is guesting on Page 7 with his sister Jackie
and
myself.
And it's cute.
It's cute. It's cute and fun. We're talking celebrity news. So
I do feel like I end up getting too real on it. Like, no. I bring too real to Page 7, and then I get conspiracy talk, and then you and Jackie look at me like I'm crazy.
Well, I bring it back to the center.
Any good Busey news?
Busey!
Busey's doing fine.
Good.
He's alive.
He's alive.
He's a lot more alive than Prince.
All right. Very nice.
R.I.P. Prince. Heil Gein.
Heil Gein. Hail me. Hail Satan.
Magoostalations.
A big Magoostalations.
Hey, believe in yourself, okay?
Except
for when you're going to go out and kill, then just stop.
Never believe in yourself when it comes to crime.
They got it.
For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to cavecomedyradio.com.
Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider.
and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 bacon bundle. White Castle. Follow your crave.